This is ESPN Radio.
Danny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And a baseball game happened last night, and we have no doubt that one of our Sports Center hosts, L. Duncan, is going to be turned up about the outcome of that. We're going to get to her a little bit later in this hour. But, Mike, we got to go back to the news of the day. And, unfortunately, it's not the Atlanta Braves winning the World Series, their first championship since 1995. But we're talking about Aaron Rodgers. He once again puts himself at the center of the conversation in the sports world, and it's not in a good way. And, quite frankly, at this point, with more sound bites coming out of Green Bay, I'm continuing to be disgusted by the moment just because of the institutional failure from the Packers and from head coach Matt LaFleur when it comes to his commentary about the Aaron Rodgers vaccination, non-vaccination situation.
Yeah, so for anyone that missed it, Aaron Rodgers all the way back in August, when asked about his vaccination status, had this to say publicly when asked by the media.
Are you vaccinated, and what's your stance on vaccinations?
Yeah, I've been immunized. There's a lot of conversation around it, around the league, and a lot of guys who have made statements and have made statements, owners who made statements. There's guys on the team that haven't been vaccinated. I think it's a personal decision. I'm not going to judge those guys.
Those guys, meaning Aaron Rodgers, because what we found out per reports is that Aaron Rodgers had alternate treatment prior to the start of training camp, and then petitioned the NFL for that treatment to allow him to be considered the same as someone who had received one of the approved vaccinations. After a lengthy back and forth, the NFL, the NFLPA, and the joint doctors ruled that he would not be considered vaccinated, and so he has been supposed to go about his business as an unvaccinated player in the NFL. But Chris, we need only look back as recent as Halloween weekend, where Aaron Rodgers, dressed as John Wick, was at a Halloween party with a number of other Packers, not wearing a mask in a situation that is currently against the rules for NFL unvaccinated players.
Yeah, and that's not the only visual that we have of Aaron Rodgers violating NFL protocols when it comes to COVID-19. We've seen him on the sidelines without his helmet, without a mask on. We've seen him in interviews, press conferences, without a mask on. We've seen him talk to reporters in pre- and post-game without a mask on. So you're putting all of these people that are in this sphere at risk because everybody's assuming your vaccination status, all the while knowing that you're not vaccinated. And so when you got asked the question early on in the regular season about your status, you intimated that you were vaccinated, saying you were immunized. And along that line of questioning, you said, yeah, it's been a lot of conversation around the league. I don't judge players that to make the decision not to get vaccinated. You're trying to present a set of facts that just aren't true in this case, which is that you're vaccinated when the reality is you're not. And the only reason that you would do that is because you want to avoid the criticism that comes along with not being vaccinated. You don't want to be seen as not doing everything you can in order to help your team have success at the highest level. But it came back to bite you once you did have a positive test, because now everybody's finding out about it. And not only are we questioning your commitment, but we're also questioning your character, because you're putting all these other people in harm's way because you made the decision not to get vaccinated and then to lie about it.
Yeah, remember, because the timeline with his positive test now, because he is an unvaccinated player, now puts him out for their game against the Kansas City Chiefs. We have seen a shorter return to play for players that are vaccinated. So this does, again, in addition to just being like a weird, bizarre thing where you feel the need to lie about it publicly in the way that he did, becomes a situation that once again puts their team at a competitive disadvantage. We talked about this against the Arizona Cardinals when you were missing your star receivers in Davante Adams and Alan Lazard, and now you're going to go into a game against the Kansas City Chiefs team that had been sliding, Chris, that would have been a nice, probably easy win for the Packers based on the way both teams had been playing, and now we got to find out about Jordan Love here in a way that just reignites a whole bunch of other weird headlines from the Packers offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing that's kind of being buried in all of this is Jordan Love getting his first career start in the NFL regular season. And so there's a lot of, anticipation around what we're going to see, how he's going to perform, and what that means for the Green Bay Packers at the quarterback spot moving forward. But unfortunately, it's more about what's being said in Green Bay and what was not done in terms of being in compliance with the NFL COVID-19 policy. And that's the part that I just don't understand. I mean, even with what head coach Matt LaFleur is saying, where everybody was abiding by COVID protocols, where we know that not to be the case. At some point, I'm going to need for the main characters in Green Bay around this to stop lying to me. Stop treating me like I'm dumb. We know that Aaron Rodgers isn't vaccinated, and we know you didn't hold him accountable in terms of what he was supposed to do in adhering to the policy agreed upon by the NFL and by the NFLPA. And let me be clear about this, Gojo. Like, the NFLPA, which represents the interest of the players, like, they're trying to protect their players and make sure that guys don't have to miss games because of COVID-19. And by Aaron Rodgers doing this and flying in the face of that policy, he's jeopardizing other guys' opportunities to continue their livelihood and making sure that they play in as many games as they possibly can. That's not fair. That's not right. And Roger Goodell and the NFL league office need to step in and do something about it.
They do, because as we heard, Rob Domofsky was on earlier on ESPN Radio, our ESPN NFL Nation Packers reporter, and echoed exactly what you just said, that based on what we'd seen publicly here, Aaron Rodgers had not been doing what Matt LaFleur claimed he was, following the policies.
Carson Wentz is unvaccinated, right? That's been noted. And every time I've seen him on the sideline, he's wearing a mask, right? When he comes off the field, he puts a mask on. When he goes to shake hands after the game, he has a mask on. Rodgers hasn't done any of that in the public. I don't know what he's doing behind closed doors. Unvaccinated players will have to wear masks in the facility when they're in meetings and things like that. We don't know what he's doing there, but when he's in the public, you know, and in places just like Carson Wentz is wearing a mask, Rodgers is not wearing.
Kenny Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, for anyone wondering what the penalties look like here, it's about a $14,000 fine, according to what we've seen so far, for unvaccinated players who violate the league's COVID protocols here. I don't know if they've got anything else in place here. And again, in this situation, this feels like it's going to be mostly about the setting surrounding what's going on with the media and what's going on with the sideline here, which could be enough, especially considering what we've got here, out-and-out deceit, at least publicly. It sounds like the folks in the building knew, which in some ways is almost worse, Chris, because we know, everyone's treated fair inside buildings. Mm-hmm. They're not all treated the same. We all know that when it comes to a football sense, when it comes to a lot of things in pro sports and beyond, right? Like, your importance to the organization is always going to create a little more leeway in a lot of areas here. Like, hey, how many tickets you get to a home game, or the way you get to travel here, or your input on personnel decisions, yada, yada, yada. This ain't that. Like, this isn't the spot where you can be given leeway based on what you bring as a player here. And that's the part that's kind of an affront and unfair to everybody else, because the rest of that building, because they're not Aaron Rodgers, and I'd imagine there are very few people who are going to check Aaron Rodgers in that building, have to just accept, all right, he gets to go about this however he wants because he's 12 and I'm not.
Yeah, but everybody in that building is culpable as far as I'm concerned, because nobody blew the whistle on Aaron Rodgers and him not being vaccinated and him not adhering to those standards that the NFL and the NFLPA set out for those types of players. Like, if guys decided that they were going to be unvaccinated, there are protocols that you have to follow in order to be able to participate in games. And Aaron Rodgers did none of that. Or even if he did, he didn't do everything that he was supposed to do when it came to preseason, when it came to NFL regular season on a day-in, day-out basis. And that's the part that's egregious, because Aaron Rodgers should not be above anybody else when it comes to compliance with COVID-19 policy. He shouldn't be. Nobody in the NFL should, because we're talking about a virus that has claimed the lives of over 700,000 Americans. At some point, that has to be the precedence, that has to be the priority, and it's clear that that wasn't the case in Green Bay. So I'm not only saying that Aaron Rodgers needs to be held responsible, but Green Bay, the organization, needs to be held responsible too. And I'm not sure whether or not the mechanism is in place for Roger Goodell to do more than just the $14,000 fine, but I know this, like, when Roger Goodell wants to punish somebody for conduct detrimental to the team or conduct detrimental to the league, he's shown himself to be heavy-handed in that regard. And to me, with what Aaron Rodgers has done, it should be something more significant than a $14,000 fine, because he's done this for over 2 months of the NFL season. God knows how many people that he put at risk because he made this selfish decision.
Yeah, and for anyone that is going to feel the need or the desire to step up and say, well, We haven't seen him contact trace and get anybody sick here. It's not about that. Preventative measures exist for a reason here. Like, just because it hasn't happened yet that we know of, thank God for that, but it doesn't mean it couldn't have happened in the future. It doesn't mean someone in there who's got someone immunocompromised in their life couldn't have been put at risk in all of this. Like, Chris, it's just out and out selfishness is what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's what it is. And he only did it because he didn't want to open himself up to the criticism that he would face, similar to what we saw with Kirk Cousins or Carson Wentz or Cole Beasley. He didn't want that heat. He didn't want that smoke. So rather than be forthright, be honest, be truthful, be a man about making the decision, he decided he was going to lie about it, or he was going to mislead folks. He was going to intimate that he was vaccinated or that he was protected from COVID-19 when the NFL told him before the season started that he wasn't. That's the problem I got with it.
It's a lot to unpack with Aaron Rodgers, who, again,
but you know what? It's not a lot, though, Gojo. The man is a liar. That's what it is.
Listen.
And we got to call it what it is today. On this show, we're going to call it what it is. He's a liar.
And he's also out for Sunday's game, by the way, after testing positive for COVID-19. So wrap all that in a bow and get ready to digest that, Green Bay Packers fans. Coming up next, though, we got to hear from another quarterback in the NFL. Baker Mayfield spoke after the Browns practice about the situation surrounding Odell Beckham Jr. We'll get to that next. You're on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. I guess with the rejoin music, we're getting everything set up for Elle Duncan to come in here and peacock a little bit about her Atlanta Braves winning the World Series. I can't wait for that, because you know she's going to have plenty to say. But, Mike, I will never make the mistake again of not making sure that Elle Duncan's walk-up music is ready to go when we introduce her in the segment. I did that the first time, never going to do it again, because she let me know about that.
Especially not today, man, because normally Elle Duncan, who you guys see on the 6 o'clock Sports Center with Kevin DeGondi, is the best teammate around here, the most pleasant person, such a great hang here. But when it comes to Atlanta sports and the pressure cooker that was this World Series run, you're right, we can't make that mistake, especially not today, when it's supposed to be a day of celebration that is instead being railroaded by Aaron Rodgers and Odell Beckham Jr.
Like, yeah, exactly.
So we're going to give Elle her day in the sun here shortly. But, Chris, we've talked so much about what's going on with Aaron Rodgers today. We got the news, Michael Thomas, the Saints wide receiver, announcing that he'll miss the entire rest of the season with potentially another ankle procedure that he may need. And then on top of that, we've got this going on with Odell Beckham Jr. His dad released that video of him being open, Baker Mayfield not throwing him the ball yesterday in advance of the NFL trade deadline. Now, the Browns did not break moves and move Odell Beckham Jr. at the trade deadline.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
But they do have themselves in an uncomfortable situation now after that video. Odell Beckham Jr. was excused from practice today, according to Kevin Stefanski, the Browns head coach. We've now heard from Baker Mayfield after practice, the Browns quarterback who's been dealing with a shoulder injury for the majority of the season and who was the subject of a lot of this ire. As Chris Canty pointed out earlier on this show, multiple teammates on the Browns liking Odell's post here. And so this was Baker Mayfield earlier today after their press conference when asked about his feelings seeing the video posted by Odell's dad.
Hurt? No. Surprised? Yes. Yeah, I think there's different things that play a factor into it. I've had conversations with his dad before, man-to-man, face-to-face. I was pretty surprised by the video and, you know, the intentions and the feelings behind it. I'd be lying if I said otherwise, but hurt? No, I'm good. I'll be all right.
So, Chris, being pretty honest, I mean, Baker Mayfield used to be a lot more candid with the media, like his rookie year and that second season. He's dialed it back a lot, but this was a guy who was clearly affected by all this, and this is one of those instances where I don't know how you couldn't be.
Yeah, I don't know how you walk this back, man. Sorry doesn't fix the lamp. Like, this relationship, it's going to be fractured moving forward, and I don't know what Odell Beckham Sr. was trying to accomplish by putting that video out there and liking it, and then Odell's teammates liking it. Like, I don't understand what he was trying to do. Was his end goal to try to pressure the Cleveland Browns into trading Odell at the deadline? Or was his goal to try to absolve his son of any blame that had to come with the criticism that we've seen from the Browns' offense of late? Like, well, I'm not sure what they were planning on accomplishing, but it doesn't feel like he's going to do either. And right now, it only serves as a distraction for the Cleveland Browns. And for Odell in particular, this could be one of those things that makes it hard for another team to commit to him beyond, you know, what we've seen so far. Like, it just doesn't feel like Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be welcomed the way that, you know, he was welcomed by the Cleveland Browns initially, just because we see the baggage that comes along with Odell. It happened in New York with the Giants and Eli Manning. Now it's happening with Baker Mayfield. At some point, the common denominator is Odell Beckham Jr. And that's what a lot of other teams around the National Football League are going to start weighing when it comes to the decision of, do we want to take on the bags that come along with number 13? Yeah. Because it's classic diva wide receiver behavior. And in the last 2 years, the production doesn't seem like it matches the headache or the pay scale. So that's the thing that you have to ask yourself the question if you're in the Odell camp. Is the juice worth the squeeze? It's starting to feel like it's not, especially knowing what he could potentially do to your locker room. And that's why Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are huddled up and trying to figure out what they do with Odell moving forward.
Well, Chris, I mean, when you say he, like, this isn't Odell's dad. This is Odell. Like, this isn't getting out without him. I'm sorry, I refuse to believe that Odell Beckham Sr. is sitting around cutting all 22 tape by himself and putting this together. Like, I have tried to use NFL Game Pass over the course of this season, and it hasn't gone well. It's not an easy interface right now, and so I can't imagine he went out there and did that unless, like we've talked about with Tom Brady's dad in the past, this is exactly what Odell wanted out there in the ether when this was being talked about here. So, by the way, more from Baker Mayfield here. Here was Baker talking about not voiding throwing to Odell in games.
Deliberately not throwing the ball to an extremely talented player that I've done a lot of work with is an opinionated statement. I'll say that.
Now, I will say this too, Chris. This was Baker talking about Odell Sr. and all this, because while I don't believe he was the one acting alone here, he's the one whose name was on this. So Baker Mayfield talked about actually seeing and wanting the same things that Odell Sr. does.
I can't exactly speculate exactly as to who he was speaking on behalf of. I think a lot of it comes from his father perspective. I think, you know, obviously, naturally, he wants his son to succeed. I can't blame him for that. I want Odell to succeed. And that's where we were at, and or at least so I thought. So that's all I really have about that one.
Yeah, this is a dude trying to hold back all of his true feelings right now and say the right thing in this setting as best he can.
Oh, no question about it. But going back to what you were saying about Senior putting this out there and not acting alone or independent of Odell, I thought Kimberly Martin had the line of the day when it came to this when she was on Get Up. And she says that Odell's silence when it comes to Odell's father speaking for him or the LeBron James tweet, Odell's silence leads us to assumption. There's a lot of assumption wrapped up in the silence from Odell, which means he's kind of co-signing or retweeting some of the things that have been put out there on his behalf. And it's his responsibility to get in front of this narrative and say he wants to be a part of the Cleveland Browns and he wants Baker Mayfield to be his quarterback. Anything other than that, we have to assume that Odell is going along with what his father's criticisms of Baker Mayfield are, and that's a problem for the Cleveland Browns because they're trying to figure out whether or not Baker Mayfield is their guy moving forward. It's hard to do that when you have a toxic environment with your wide receiver and your quarterback having this kind of friction between them.
Coming up next, nothing toxic anymore. All smiles, love, and maybe a few tears in the city of Atlanta. We visit with the champs next here after this word from Wendy's. Now, if you're looking or waiting around right now at Wendy's, see what all the hype's about with our new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real natural cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the very last fry, or we'll replace them. These aren't just typical fries you add to a meal. These are fries worth adding a meal to. Abandon the old cold and soggy and head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's, back after this, Candy and Golic Jr. with L. Duncan on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
The 0-2, a swing and a bouncer to short. Swanson has it. The throw across to Freeman, and that'll do it. The Atlanta Braves defeat the Houston Astros 7-0, and they win the World Series in 6 games.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance.
What's up?
Mike Golic
Big
Jr.
Big Talk.
Chris
Big Game,
Kenny.
Teacher's Pet. take all guests
join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And you already know who that voice is in the background. That's SportsCenter host L. Duncan in the building celebrating her Atlanta Braves winning the chip. L, the Atlanta Braves are World Series champions. How
now
does that sound? How does that sound to you?
Pack them tight. Let's go! We ain't no numero uno. Let's go! You Optima. We swish the sweet. Okay, I'm sorry. You played Pastor Troy and I want to fight. Okay.
You can't put that down South Georgia boy on here and expect people to act right.
That DSGB always brings out the goons. Always.
They be my clique, right?
And they were out last night, L. They were out last night.
You know they were. Troy, Pastor Troy was undoubtedly somewhere with his belt, his championship heavyweight belt somewhere, just being Pastor Troy. Canty, you asked me, how does it feel to be World Series champs? I honestly don't know. Last night, people kept texting me. They're like, what are you doing right now? Are you celebrating? And we were just pacing. Like, I was just sort of walking around my basement. I didn't know how to feel because, A, it didn't feel real. It's been 26 years for the Braves, but it's been far longer, it feels like, when you think about the broad scope of Atlanta sports. But I think it's the fact that, like, this team faced the same kind of adversity that has taken every other Atlanta team out before them. And they just kept going. And I think that's what was so shocking about this, is that it's not like we were the fortunate son, like we were the destined, you know, the team destined for greatness from the beginning. Everything that we went through, everybody that we lost, we don't have our best player. The face of our franchise didn't play. And we won a World Series, mostly because they made these offseason trades for these dudes that were a bunch of casts off. And it just... it's nuts. And Charlie Morton went down in game one and it didn't matter. And Max Fried looked like he was about to get hurt in the beginning of that game too. And it's like, I just kept waiting on the other shoe to drop and it never did. And I don't know what that feels like, but I know that, I hope anyway, it's given Atlanta the swag and confidence to enjoy these next rides.
Well, and you were the one that said that to us
initially,
Elle, when we talked about all of the curse talk around Atlanta and Sherman and all these different things.
Yeah.
You said, you know, like, let's try on just living through the moment with all of this. And that seems to be what lifted this team. Like you mentioned, you lose Ronald Acuña Jr. in the middle of the season here. Everyone thinks, oh, they're going to be sellers at the deadline here. So from that point to now, like, you only get there believing in that way.
100%. But again, like, I think that's not... it was when Acuña went down. And again, like, think about his contributions. If not for him literally having a historic season to start, the Braves are in even worse shape than they were in August. You know, he was the only reason they were a bright spot for so long. And he goes down and it's sort of like, all right, well, of course he did. And that's it. And any momentum maybe that we built on from last year is over. That's what we all assumed and thought. But look at Alex Anthopoulos, you know, who you know, in the broad history of sports is like a GM that made like the right decision, because we've had so many make terrible decisions when it comes to acquiring and sending guys out. So I don't know. I felt really bad for these guys. I think I said it on this show too, that they're carrying all of this weight of a city. And I've seen a lot of people, like, on, you know, Twitter and stuff, be petty right now and say things like, oh, a curse. I just thought Atlanta was bad. Like, it's not a curse. You guys just suck. You're irrelevant. Like, and you finally won. Like, how? But it's so much more than that. And you're seeing Atlanta sort of come together in a way Atlanta has not come together in a very long time, because they needed this. They needed this collective exhale. You know, they needed, for once, when they have a conversation about sports, to not be the team left holding the bag as the most disappointing teams in history. So the city's just feeling really good right now.
And it kind of felt like it might have been going that way, L, after you jump out to a 3-1 series lead and you drop back-to-back games.
Mm-mm.
And it gets back to Houston. I was just like, wait a minute, what's going to happen with this? And then you ultimately end up taking care of your business. But I got to ask you this question, because we talked about how it feels like everybody outside of Houston was rooting for the Atlanta Braves to win, just because the Houston Astros might be one of the most unlikable teams in baseball history. But did it mean more to you guys, the Braves fan base, being able to beat a team that's already been known to be cheaters based on what happened a couple of years ago?
Hell no. I would have beat the Bad News Bears and been happy with it. Are you joking? It's a World Series. I don't give a damn. We do not have the benefit of being choosy about who we beat. I mean, listen, is it nice that we were in a situation where it seemed like we had the support, right, of the casual fan base.
Oh,
yes.
It seemed like
it helped.
The Braves seemed like America's team a lot of this. Like, if you didn't have a dog in the fight here, and maybe it's because everyone seems to know somebody from Atlanta, and we've seen friends of ours go through so much hurt, but it felt like that.
It did, and so that was nice to see, like, sort of people rally around and support the Braves, when, again, it's always sort of been the opposite, where it's like we're more of a punchline than anything else. But, yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you, though. I love Dusty Baker, and I think that in the same way that everyone wanted this for Brian Snicker, who's the skipper for the Braves, who is a lifelong Brave, has been in the organization for over 40 years, I think people really wanted this for Dusty, too. So I hate that it had to be against Dusty, but I'm going to give the Astros the benefit of the doubt and say that they only have a couple of players left over from that cheatery-ass team, too. And in the same way that this Braves team did not want to be associated with the team last year that was different and blew it, I'm going to say that it's a different team. So they put up a hard-fought fight, sort of. But we prevailed in the end.
Oh. Well, as a Yankees fan, I hate every single one of those Astros players, including Correa, Altuve, and Bregman. Those dudes are still there, and they knocked my team out in 2017, and they clearly were cheating. So, yeah, I was on your side last night when I was watching that game. Let's I was go. Rooting for the Braves, and I was glad when Jorge Soler blasted that ball in the third inning. Like, I was like, that's it, the emphatic shot. That ball still hadn't landed, and if it did, it's somewhere in Dallas. Like, I was there for all of it last night, and I was celebrating with you guys, and I'm a Yankees fan, so I had to say my piece about it because I can't stand the damn Houston Astros.
Good. So then you feel good about the Astros getting theirs in the end, right?
Absolutely.
And in the dominating way, too, right, Canty? Like, for me, no one's ever going to be able to go, it just came down to one or this or this or that. I mean, the Braves manhandled the Astros for that whole series with the exception of two games. It was an absolute mollywhopping.
Al, was this something, because I saw this felt generational for a lot of Braves fans who, you know, had been young when they won this in the 90s and talked about their parents waking them up for this. Like, was this kind of that feeling for you here? Like, you got kids now. Was this like a wake them up and get them ready for this moment?
Oh, well, hell no. I didn't wake my kids up at midnight for sure. God, no. I'm like, oh, Canty, that's Gojo. He has no kids. He doesn't understand that you don't wake up children, especially not 3-year-olds and 10-month-olds. But I was awake for the last World Series. I was in middle school for it. But I remember being young for like the 91 World Series and some of the other World Series in the 90s and like all the superstitions. And I think that's the thing that people don't understand about the Braves is that the Falcons have been more of sort of the trendy, you know, football is obviously quite important. And Michael Vick really helped give that franchise a new fan base. But it's always been about the Braves for Atlanta. It was really sort of the cross-generational, cross-cultural, like everybody loved the Braves, from the country artists to the hip-hop artists and everybody in between. And we had that, and we took it for granted for so many years. 14 straight division pennants. You take those things for granted. I don't think any of us thought it would take 26 years. Now that it's happened, I hope we appreciate it more.
Al, which one of these teams, these championship teams in your lifetime, do you have more affection for? I mean, is it the 95 Braves, or is it this version of the Braves?
That's tough. I mean, you know, I would say that 95 Braves was like my peak Braves fandom. You know, I'm 12 years old and like, you know, I had all their pennant flags up in my room. So,
but they were supposed to win. They were so good. They were supposed to win with that rotation.
They were. I mean, the greatest rotation of all time. David Justice was my favorite player. So him getting like that game clinching home run was amazing. I'll say that this is significant in a different way, Canty. You know, not to like cop out and get out of the question, but just because, again, I didn't know. I took it for granted. I didn't know that your team just isn't in the conversation every single year. I didn't know how hard it would be. I didn't know that Atlanta would go through so much other heartbreak across all of their sports. So I would say that based on the catharsis, based on the timing of it, that this is probably the greatest championship in the history of Atlanta sports.
That is L. Duncan, co-host of the 6 o'clock Sports Center, giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Before we hit L's music one last time on this Atlanta Braves series, I want to leave you with this from Jock Peterson here.
Okay.
An excellent quote in an excerpt from Jeff Passan's piece about this team. Jock Peterson, who apparently during this year when the Braves were going on here, Harry Styles was coming through Atlanta on tour, got up on stage, talked about the team, said he predicted they would go all the way. Jock Peterson got alerted to this, knew somebody who could deliver a message to Harry Styles, and sent a jersey and a note which read, "From one bad B to another, love Jock Peterson."
Oh my God.
That's that dude here. Fire up the damn music, Cliff.
I love this man. Let's go. Let's go.
L. Duncan.
Come down here. Let's go. Say it again. that ain't no fear. You could talk that in my ear, but it ain't. Come down here. Let's go. We're the champions. the champs are here.
The Atlanta Braves are your World Series champions. Coming up next, we'll head to New York to take an L on ESPN Radio.
Ali, Boombayay, let's go.
Atlanta Braves putting on for their city. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, we're in a celebratory mood because we just had Elle Duncan on, and she was proud, chest puffed out, because her Atlanta Braves won the World Series championship, as she should be. But now we've got to transition to my New York Football Giants, and sad to say, I feel like I have to put a paper bag over my head just because of the embarrassment that is this year's team. And on top of the embarrassment, I get the insult from Joe Judge that the headset communication is a big reason why they fell short out in Arrowhead in Kansas City this past Monday night, when in reality is they were just outcoached and outclassed by a better football team.
Yeah, Chris, this is getting tough to watch right here, right? Because we had this, like, this is the before and after. This is Joe Judge before the NFL reviewed this news. He was talking after the Giants lost, talking about trying to call a timeout in the first half, and the headset confusion.
The headsets are going out. No, we're having headset issues. This happened in every game so far. So we deal with the league, and they keep telling us there's different software updates or whatever it is. But we had to call two timeouts today because we're trying to send the deals in personnel-wise, and you got half the headsets aren't getting the reception. So that's the issue right there. So we're trying to make sure we're in the right call. There were some other times we just didn't like the look, want to make sure we settled down on. But the other ones talking about with the substitution deals right there, yeah, it's breakdowns, and we have to make sure the hardware is working. So whatever the issue with that is, you know, people involved with that better get it fixed fast.
Well, the NFL did jump in and say, we believe there's no issue with the Bose headphones that we've got on the sideline, and said that they haven't identified any headset issues from Monday night. So now, here's Joe Judge on the Monday conference call after the fact, saying he's done talking about this.
Let's just clear it up real simple then. We talk with the league. They're looking into resolving the issues that we've had throughout the year. We'll talk continuously with them. Look, that being said, look, I made it very clear last night. I'm not an excuse maker. I was asked a direct question in terms of, you know, why we're using timeouts in certain situations, and that's the reason right there. So that's all I'm going to say about the headsets right there.
Wait, Chris, come help your man.
How am I supposed to help him, Gojo? What am I supposed to do? Like, he keeps stepping in front of a microphone and trying to lead us to believe that this is all on the headsets. Meanwhile, the Giants are being penalized to the tune of 10 penalties for 90 yards. And then Daniel Jones is eye-blanking the receivers and throwing the ball right back to the other team after our defense gets a turnover. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I understand that the miscommunication can lead to some mistakes that happen on the field. But, I mean, when it comes to the overall discipline level of this team, and then the fact that some of the play calls just don't make sense, or some of the end-of-game situations, the way that Joe Judge managed that with his timeouts, like, those are indefensible. Whether the headsets are working or not, you can't defend that. You can't defend Sterling Shepard running a 2-yard route on 3rd and 4 in the red zone right before halftime. You can't defend not using your last timeout on the right side of the 2-minute warning and letting the Kansas City Chiefs let the clock run down to where your offense only gets the ball back with 1:07 left on the clock. Those are things that are indefensible. They both fall at the feet of the head coach. Stop trying to absolve yourself of blame of things that are in your direct control, things that are directly your responsibility. Stop trying to blame the headsets or whatever else on your lack of being able to put your team in position to have the kind of success that ownership was looking for coming into this season.
Well, and Chris, you know what? We've seen Joe Judge do the accountability thing, and we've seen plenty of coaches do this, right? I mean, hell, look at the Lions and Dan Campbell, how much he's come up and said, hey, you know, this thing's rotted from the head down. You know, I have to take responsibility for what's going on out here. And it's not like that helps anything either. It sounds good, but after a while, when you keep performing poorly the way these teams had, everything you say sounds bad. But with the Giants, when it's one thing or another like this, if it were alone and isolated, it'd be different. But the fact that it's all connected back to, like you said, the mistakes on the field, it gets impossible not to ignore this and to attribute this to the head coach.
Yeah, it's a head coach issue, man. And him saying it rots from the head down, that's cool. And him saying that they're on the submarine and nobody else is coming to save them and they got to patch leaks, all of that stuff is cool when your team is showing signs of progress and when you're winning games. But what happened on Monday night, that was a winnable game for the New York Giants, and they blew it because of mismanagement in situational football. And that's on your head coach. And I don't want to hear about, oh, yeah, that's my bad, that's my fault. Get it fixed. Or otherwise, ownership needs to find another coach that can get it fixed.
And we'll continue to see. They've got one more game before the bye week here, a chance to maybe sort out, do some soul searching. At the very least, you got to start to address some of these things that have been routine problems for this team on the football field as we've tried to make decisions about the future of the coaches, the quarterback, and everyone else involved. Coming up next, though, we do have a statement from the NFL regarding Aaron Rodgers' vaccination status. Next.